Hello, everyone. It's Michael Jacob with Unleashing Intuition Secrets, joined once again by Juan O'Savin. We're going to be talking about Tina Peters, Gold Star mom. Tina Peters' son was a Navy SEAL, died, unfortunately, in a parachuting accident in New York. He was jumping for the Navy SEAL team, Leapfrogs. And unfortunately, his main parachute and his reserve didn't open. And unfortunately, that's not a good thing. So he unfortunately died in that. And so she is a Gold Star mom. She has come out against electric fraud in Colorado. Just recently, she basically got a stay in her court case. We thought that she was going to go away and be held up in court for a long time. So fortunately, she is out now.
Go lie.
Juan, go ahead.
Hey. Okay.
Sorry.
You're a producer talking in the background. I wasn't sure if she had it right there or not. Good to see you again there, bro.
Good to see you.
You know, the thing about Tina, let me just say this. In the this whole thing, Tina was a county clerk in Mesa, Colorado. And what she was concerned with, she had a bunch of constituents that told her that after the 2020 election, she needed to do things to preserve the record inside the vote there in her county where she was the county. And she just said, you know, we're fine. We have good records. The machines, you know, these are the gold standard of voting machines. So she just wasn't concerned. And people kept coming back to her, and they were all upset, and they're writing her, you know, messages and calling and all that. And she blew it off for the most part. But a couple of people got to her that, you know, she was a little bit concerned because Dominion had scheduled to come in and service her voting machine. And in the service contract, it's supposed to just let them change batteries, check to make sure they're okay and that sort of thing. But they wanted to take all day doing it. And she's like, if they're just looking, you know, I can do a backup on a computer in a few minutes. Why do they need all day? Something didn't feel right. Something didn't sound right. And it's her job to preserve the voting record in a federal election for, you know, a couple of years. And so she asked questions and you know, she talked to the voting people for the state and said, hey, they're going to service thing. Is there anything I need to do? And it doesn't sound right. And they just, oh, no, it's fine. Just let it go. And somewhere in there, when she was doing what she was doing, she decided that this just didn't quite seem right. And and she wasn't getting right answers from other people in the state. So she reached out, and we had a certain person that had the right clearances to go in and make a image of her machine, which was done before Dominion came out, and then left her a drive to make an image after they were done and forward that also to take a look at, see what they changed, if anything, inside the machine or that could affect the vote record. And so she had also a copy of everything that was in there before they touched it, just in case, because that's her job. That's what she signs an oath to maintain those records. That's her job. That's what she's elected to do. And so she did it. A little bit of time goes past, and there was an action that there was, you know, some fraud going on. Now, the part that wasn't public and is about to become more public, portions of it were kind of known, but they weren't completely known, was that there had been work going on for quite some time prior to her getting this snapshot. You know, essentially just a download copy of everything in the Dominion machine before and after. And there was people that had come forward outside the country who had, described how they were being tasked, employed to help flip the vote, and describing how they were doing it. That number of people has increased since the original first couple had reached out to try and, short story, protect their life. And, but the information they gave a place to look. You know, when you go into these huge computer programs, there's so many places, so many rabbit holes. Unless somebody gives you a guide, even with a team of people, it can be hard to find just the right spot to figure out what happened. And, they're very, very complex. To think of like the Enigma machine, coding machine that was there with the Germans in World War II. And it took a whole team, and then they built a computer. Turing led the team that built a computer to decipher the code in the computer. Once they had a couple ideas how to do it, go about it. In this case, a complex project was done to go in and search, looking for certain things that were there and some things that weren't there, and see what they had done. And it corroborated some of the statements that these people in the background had made. How does that apply to second? Some of these people, so I heard it. No, you didn't. Because what's coming later this week is really just the first salvo, something much bigger. There's going to be some things filed in the Supreme Court related to the witnesses' statements, the people who actually flipped the election from outside, and their disclosures of how they did what they did, and then the corroborating information, included from Tina Peters' stuff. If we didn't have what Tina Peters allowed access yet, you wouldn't have the corpus delicti, body of the evidence. You'd have statements by people, and we've had lots of people that have come out, computer experts have said, we see an algorithm, this could be natural, this is an artificial number that's been come with that couldn't possibly be a true number from the election. But those, seeing the stink, the vapors of a crime, aren't quite the same as actually seeing the hard evidence that corroborates. Somebody could say, I killed somebody, okay, where's the body? They might be a kook, they might be a lunatic, they might be, insane. Okay, so you want to go find the body and then see if they've been coerced to say something that wasn't true, they're mentally ill, like that. So you need to go get the body of the evidence. What Tina provided with the access was the opportunity to get the hard copy that was the body of the evidence. And then there was other work that was done that found at other places. I think of, there's this prophecy by Kim Clement, and a lot of the people here in the audience are very familiar with Kim Clement and some of the stuff he said. He said that God, speaking through him, because he's a prophet, is the way he portrays it, was kind of laughing at the people trying to hijack America. And God had a brilliant plan to defeat them all. But it was so simple that only God himself could have thought of it. A simple plan, a simple stone that just like David slew Goliath with just a simple stone. Goliath had, he was a giant, so well over 9 feet tall. David was, you know, a teenage boy. He wasn't tall in stature like some of the other brothers that he had, and Saul, who was the king, was probably 5'6", 5'7", at the time that he went out to go after Goliath. Saul, the king, David had volunteered to go to war with Goliath. Everybody else was quaking in their boots. A whole army of guys would go out and engage Goliath every day for 40 days. Goliath came out and taunted the Israelites to send out their best warrior and just do single-man combat instead of everybody having to die in some kind of a conflict. And the reason that's kind of an interesting thing, why didn't one side or the other just attack? Where Goliath came out was they had a place where you come up the hill to come into that area of Israel. And there's kind of rock outcroppings and all that. And you could kind of hide in behind the rocks. And then there's an open plain or mesa that goes several hundred yards. And then there's another rock outcropping and it goes up the hill. And so you have this open plain in between. And if either side tried to cross that opening to attack the other, they're in open ground. And of course, for the attacking army coming with Goliath, they would have to fight uphill, and that's hard to do. The Israeli army being weaker, the Jews being weaker, they could protect themselves, but they really couldn't go on the attack the other direction. So they're both in kind of a standoff. And so for 40 days, they're on either side of this plain, and Goliath had come out every day and taunt and say all sorts of stuff. And David was sent by his mom to go take some bread and cheese and milk to his brothers so they could, have some sustenance while they're sitting there waiting for the big fight to begin. And David gets out there and he arrives right as this guy's spouting all this stuff about the Jews and why don't you send somebody out? You're all a bunch of chickens and weaklings and everything else. David heard that, and because he was also denouncing the God of the weaklings, that incensed David because he was a man of faith. And so he says, why don't one of you guys go out and do this? Shoot, if you won't do it, I'll do it. But he's just a kid. And so then he finally convinces him he's going to go do it. They offer him his armor, the king's armor, everything else. It's too big for him. Won't fit him. It'll slow him down. It's too heavy. Goliath, on the other hand, he's got heavy armor plate. He's got a helmet. He's got a huge sword. And then he's so covered in armor and he's 9+ feet tall. He's like a tank. He's even got an armor or a shield bearer, a kid that's, carrying his shield around to block from spears and all sorts of things. So, it's really not one person you're taking on, it's two. And David says, I don't care. And he doesn't take the armor. And he goes out to engage a Goliath. And you have to kind of picture, that's where the 23rd Psalms comes in. It says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He's moving out across that mesa, that plain, headed for Goliath. And as he gets closer and closer, he gets inside of the range to get Goliath, but he has one thing to his advantage, and that's he's lithe, he's fast, he's mobile, he's not weighed down, and he can move very quickly. Goliath can't because he's covered in all this armor. And they didn't expect that kind of an attack. He wouldn't come up and just go hand-to-hand combat with him or something. Goliath had a huge spear that he could throw that was monstrous. David, being so quick, got down inside of range. And then picture, what's David doing all day? He's out there herding sheep. Everybody else has gone to the army. They're all working out every day. They're doing their stuff. All David has to do all day is guard the sheep from bears or, there's a lion or whatever might show up, wolves. And so all day long, what's he doing? He's practicing with his slingshot, his sling. and plinking bottles and cans off the tree branches. That's all he got to do all day. He gets pretty good. He's a good gunslinger and very accurate. And you have to picture a bear has this heavy matted down fur. You find him out in the wild, and that fur can be pretty mad, lumped up and everything else. You hit him with a rock, that rock's just going to bounce off that fur. You have to hit a bear with that kind of armor. You can go out with a gun. A lot of times you miss the vital spot, and the bear keeps charging. They'll kill guys. Happens all the time, where they've shot the bear almost point blank. Yeah, with high caliber weapons, they don't hit the right spot, and the bear kills them. You got to hit them right on the snout if you're going to use a rock, a slingshot type of thing. And that's what you practice for. And same with a wolf or a lion or something like that, because they're matted down here, really doesn't let you get a kill shot on them easily. So David goes out, he gets in range for Goliath, and he's such a sharp, pinpoint shot. He lets loose, and this stone, you got a picture, David's below Goliath. He's shorter, so it has an upwards trajectory. And you have to understand about the stone that David used. It says that when David was getting ready to go out and says his morning prayers, he goes to the brook Kidron nearby, and he goes and picks out a stone. He uses what's called a gat. You sling in these rocks all day long. If they're different weights, if they're different roundness, they don't sail the same. And you got to be pinpoint accurate. He has a stone that's the right diameter, the weight. Some stones weigh more than others. And you got to find just the right one that's the right size, the right roundness. And so he has a stone for comparison for weight and everything else. And then he goes in the brook, and why do you go to a brook? Because it's river rocks. They're rolling downhill, so they round it off. He picks out five stones, puts them in his pocket that matches guide stone, goes out. When he meets Goliath and he's moving, he lets loose, and the stone sails in an upward trajectory. He didn't hit Goliath on the forehead where the skull is thick and where he has a helmet that covers that. A lot of times these guys had helmets that had a little extension to cover the bridge of the nose. So if a guy's hitting you with a sword or something like that, trying to get a slicing shot, it won't get down to the skin. It'll deflect it. But because of that upward trajectory, the priests talk about the fact that Goliath actually got hit right on the tip of the nose, and it sailed upwards into his forehead and sank deep into his forehead. In other words, didn't hit the hardest part of his forehead. It hit down in the softer area and went right up through the sinus cavity and deep into the forehead to the brain. Goliath came down, and he went over, took Goliath's sword, and chopped his head off. Goliath's shield bearer ran off. And during this time, all the Israelis came out of the rocks and charged all of the troops there with Goliath and ran them all down. Even then, it wasn't done for the day, because David had four more stones. Goliath had a brother, and his brother had three sons that were also giants. And so David didn't just slay Goliath. He slew Goliath, his brother, and the three sons. He got all the giants that day. Pretty active day. There's a scripture where Christ is talking to Peter, and Peter makes the profession of faith and knowledge. And Christ says to Peter, "On this rock I will build my church." Well, Peter, his name means rock. Tina Peters is a rock. And nice. Just a simple stone. But in the hand of God, in this hand of God moment, that golden BB, that simple stone, is what has been cast and flung and is about to hit the enemy right in the snout. The information that she provided, this gold star mom, that nobody could see coming. See, she didn't, who would think of it out there in flyover country? Mesa, Colorado, it's just flyover country. It's 3 hours to Denver. It's just a small county. She's just a simple mom. And that information is at the core of what's about to be unleashed, not just on America, but on the world. And why is it so important? Because now, for all of this time, where we've been hearing over and 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 over, no election fraud, no proof, no way that Trump won the election. It's just, you know, these are election deniers, the mega fools. We now have the people. We have the information. We have the corroborating data, the corpus delicti, of what exactly happened. And at the core of that whole discussion, Tina Peters. She's the simple stone, golden BB. You know, her son, you know this from your own stuff, to have both a main and a reserve chute fail is just very, 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 very rare. And there's real questions about exactly what happened there. You know, a guy packs his own chutes and had done, you know, he wasn't just any parachute, he was a Golden Knight. And to have both of them fail like that, something very wrong there. On our jet car 1 year, we had somebody new that packed the chutes and wasn't paid attention to enough and had one thing that was wrong in a fold, and chutes didn't deploy. And had near catastrophic result as a result of it. There's stuff that can go wrong, but it's hard to imagine in this case that that made sense. Even in the investigation afterwards, there's a question about what exactly happened there. Since Tina provided this information at great risk to herself, you know, that's the other thing. Tina gave the information to the world at this symposium that Mike Lindell did a couple of years ago. And there was real questions at the time, should she really do it? She was really, she wasn't scheduled for that event. It was really not going where I think it was intended to go. We'd had concerns going into it, some of us, but she went ahead and gave her information, knowing that there was going to be pushback, there was going to be drama because of it, and there was. For example, her husband, they were high school sweethearts, had developed dementia and Alzheimer's and is at a care facility being taken care of. State workers came and interviewed him and had him sign some paperwork. She told Tina, or he told Tina later when he talked to her, they had me sign something. I think it was bad. Well, they'd had her, had him sign papers saying that he wanted a divorce and that she was, you know, doing bad things to him. He's in a care facility. And so then they move him, you know, like they don't have care facilities in Colorado for people with Alzheimer's or dementia. They move him to Arkansas while they're attacking her because of what she did in bringing this information forward. He just recently died in Arkansas, and she was never able to get him to a good facility. And there's questions about the quality of that facility. These people have attacked her mercilessly, Gold Star Mom, and they came in to search her house for any evidence to these vote records. She had received the chest with all of her son's belongings and she kept it at the foot of her bed. And she hadn't had, she just couldn't open up the chest that had the flag that drapes caution, his coffin and personal possessions. She had that at the foot of her bed when the federal agents showed up to go through her house. They pulled everything out and just threw it all on the floor in her bedroom. Had walked off and on stuff and, you know, just trashed her house. No respect for what had happened at all. And completely unnecessary. Just wanted to make a statement. And that's been the case with the judge involved and a lot of the things, her computer and things like that. So she's gone through it all. She, you know, has gotten death threats endlessly from people. She is the heroine in this whole thing for America. And where we're at right now and the things that happen over the remainder of the year, there's lots of heroes, there's lots of villains. She is at the center, this hero that even other people that did all sorts of things to come out, make their statements, do the legal stuff, throw the money in, everything else, the simple stone in the sling that is going to beam these guys is a gal, a gold star, Martina Peterson. That's the person. And I want everybody not to forget that. She's, you know, struggling a bit, and I'll get a link for people that can maybe send something to her account so she has a couple bucks in her pocket. She's this American hero. Someday we'll have statues in her honor for everything that she has done. The fight's still on right now. As we hear the things that come out over the next weeks and months concerning this data, the statements by the people who did what they did, the corroborating evidence concerning this stolen vote 2020 and the vote since. Burr, who brought this to you, evidence to prove it, so that all those people around you keep saying, well, where's the proof? Where's the proof? What's the proof? Well, how do you know? Where did it come from? Came right out of those machines. Came right from that machine in Mesa that Tina Peters allowed access to make a copy so you had a record.
Nice. Looks like Tina's in the chat. She says, have all three Mesa County reports proof of stolen election now on a SCOTUS in D.C. March 15th with Lake versus Fuentes. We have the proof, if you didn't hear the beginning of what Juan said. So, yeah, I mean, she came in on another show that I did, and we were all, like, you know, concerned that, you know, because she's going through that court case, and they basically pushed it out. So they've done this for many people because I don't really think they have the evidence. They're trying to make people roll over, but she didn't roll over, and I think she's amazing. I've seen her on shows before. She is very smooth, very, very calm. She is a rock.
Well, you know what's interesting? In dealing with so many of the people that have been involved in this from the beginning, there's so many of them are so sketchy. They're hot and cold. They aren't steady at the wheel or consistent. As you dig into what they're doing, they'll make claims, and then as you get deeper into it, it just doesn't quite pan out. You know, whatever embellishing, etc. The stuff that we got from Tina, the neat thing about it is it's straight out of the machine. And then we had it to corroborate other stuff coming from other locations. And it was a cross-check that was absolutely crucial. And while there's a intervening period of time, it's taken time to go in and prove this stuff out. We had people that said, you know, here's what happened. Here's how we did it. But to sift and go through stuff, and check and recheck and cross-check to verify, to go through the forensics is not, you know, an instantaneous thing, even with really sharp guys. Because a lot of times witnesses, you might have three or four witnesses observe the exact same event from different perspectives, and the account you get can even look like it doesn't quite match. And you got to go back through and understand, well, but from his perspective, he saw it this way. He couldn't have seen this other thing. So his account's correct. There's some real sifting to find out who the witnesses are that are telling you exactly the truth and who might not have. One of the other things that's not within this current piece that's going to come out is the pathways that were used to move the information out of the country and back into the country. We know the multiple pathways that went out of the country, and they were diverse, and it was through internet connections. The route that it came back is a very specific location, and that's going to be stunning. Once you know it, you'll be like, oh, okay, well, now all the pieces fall together. That's a little further down the road, and we'll talk about that. It actually goes back to stuff that goes to the Dulles brothers, the two brothers, one running the CIA and one running a State Department. But once you understand what happened here and how it was done, a lot of mysteries, a lot of questions are all going to be like, oh, shoot, well, that makes sense. Now I get it. And this won't be over in a day, but what it really comes down to, we're now in range. Like Goliath, we're not coming up to with just a slingshot. These are battleships, and we're about to turn sideways and start unleashing V-dub bugs at Mach 3 all over their terrain. And this isn't going to stop. It's going to go on. It's just because there's so much information here that you really can't just put it out in one little piece. And even with what you would do in a Supreme Court filing, the amount of data that you have has to be restricted. There's a lot of the sifting inner points will take some time, and justifiably, it will take other people to go through this and sift through it and verify the data. I'm very comfortable that you're about to see this pivot moment that begins to go a completely different direction. The case that's being done in D.C., they did not develop this data independently. It's been offered to them to use in that case, the Kerry Lake case. It was developed separate and apart from that. This is a convenient place to insert it. It's timely. It's before the Supreme Court. But there's other locations also. I was talking with the folks today on another front that it's also going to be released in that actually I think makes even more sense. And so don't think that this is all of it once and done. This isn't stopping here. See other actions that are based off the same information over the next weeks and months, and it will be relentless is my opinion.
Mm. So you had you sent me another information about this sheriff in Pontiac, Michigan, Darleaf, that basically was investigating the Dominion employees. It says these Dominion's employees directed and tasked Serbian foreign nationals to remotely access the Michigan election system. So they wanted him to bring all of his information from his investigation. He basically said, honorably, I refuse because this is, I didn't want to compromise my investigation. So they're, like you said, there's battleships are basically lining up. So looking like we're launching, going to launch some Volkswagens at these guys.
I kid about it. You know, Volkswagens, you know, an artillery shell coming off of these big guns. These are huge guns in these battleships. And when they launch these things out, you know, they weigh, you know, 1,000 pounds or more. And they fling them off there, you know, tens and tens of miles. And when they hit the ground shakes. It's a big womp. But those Volkswagens hitting the shore, they're going to make a big wampus. The interesting thing about the Michigan has just been wild the last couple of months. There was a attack on Christina Caramo, who was the head of the GOP, Republican Party in Michigan, elected head. And internally, there was this attempt to try and take her out of office and claim that they'd had a vote of other GOP people to take her out of office. She's the legitimate head of the GOP in Michigan. And so there's all sorts of back and forth legal stuff. And the reason is because she, in looking at the books, found that there was problems in some of the spending and in the bookkeeping, and the books weren't right. Well, the people that were in there that had been taken out, they had tried to get her to take a deal to essentially money launder money to certain candidates. They said, no way. No, we're not doing that. No, we're not doing that. So once she figured out what's going on, they've been on the attack to keep her from the books and to keep this in play. And there's a certain moneyed crowd that is concerned that they're going to be exposed within their players. And I don't think that at the national level has been completely understood exactly what was going on there. But it's over this laundering essentially through the GOP there. This sheriff is part of the constitutional sheriff's groups across the country doing an investigation. And he's uncovered and has people who've gone on the record, given him statements, and shown their communications history with these Serbian nationals outside of the U.S., based outside the U.S., encamped outside the U.S., who were communicating with elections people in Michigan so that they could vote in Michigan back in 2020. He's doing this investigation, and the AG in Michigan is part of this crowd or somehow affiliated with this crowd that doesn't want to get to justice because it'll expose some problem children there in Michigan. So the AG has tried to come in and capture the records, find out exactly what they got, so they know what they're dealing with, looking at this election interference. And they've got a full-on all-out assault, because if you prove from Michigan that the vote inside the state was cooked from outside of the United States, that's a act of war. And if you have people inside the state, including moneyed people who were getting assistance to make sure that certain people got into office, that's a treasonous, traitorous act. So this sheriff is saying that he has the legal authority, he is the highest authority in his county to do these investigations, and that even other state agencies, including the AG, and federal agencies do not have the same level of authority that he does as a constitutional sheriff. And of the 3,000 sheriffs in the country right now, about 300 have become constitutional sheriffs, part of that group, claiming constitutional authority as the highest law enforcement person in the county. And so he's not providing his evidence to the AG or to the feds, what he's found for the time being, because it's an ongoing investigation. And his concern is that if he gives that information out, lets them know what he's got, they're going to go out and intimidate those witnesses or start cooking it or whatever. And he's building a case to go to court right there in his county against these state actors who participated in flipping the vote in Michigan. And more importantly for us out across the country, if the mechanism was used to cook the vote in his county, it wouldn't make sense for these global players to only do it in one little county in Michigan. If they're doing it in one place, they're doing it in 100. They're doing it in even more, probably, all across the country. And then the other side of this is the manipulation of the vote, not just 2020, but 2022 and some of the primaries right now. It's not just players from Serbian nationals, if you will. There are players from other parts of the world that are involved in similar things, and there's a coordination that's occurred and a collusion between people working in three-letter agencies inside the United States and colluding with other intelligence agencies outside the United States, other groups, primarily out of NATO countries, but a couple of other also, so that by the time this all gets sifted out, you're going to see that it's like an octopus. There's multiple locations where the activity was coordinated to cook the vote and then come back into the U.S., but there's a common route back into the U.S. for the information and then dissemination that was highly secure. And when you understand how that was done and why it was done there, a whole bunch of pieces will all fall in place. I don't want to take anyone down the sails for some people involved who have done amazing work to get it to that point. I just want to tell you that, you know, it's way more developed even than you'll know by the end of the week. It's something that will take probably realistically 90 to 120 days to fully kind of be out as far as the current people involved want it to be. And it'll take time for the American people and people around the world to process what they're about to hear. They're going to have to really think about this. Because think of this, Michael. We're on the brink of nuclear war right now in Central Europe. You and I have talked about this a number of times. How many hundreds of thousands of people have died in Ukraine alone since this administration took power in Washington, D.C.? And who's behind that? You know, Putin, when he talked to Tucker several weeks back, Putin said that Biden isn't running Washington, D.C. Biden's not running America. And Tucker says, well, who is? You know, of course, we commonly talk about how it's, you know, well, it's Obama. You know, King Hussein of Jordan was in Washington, D.C. here a few weeks back. And Biden brings him out to the podium and introduces him. And he says, oh, and right there, Barry's on that monitor right there, up there. He's watching us on that camera. And he points over to the right of the podium. King Hussein looks over. Oh, there's the television, or video monitor. So Barry's watching this whole thing on the video monitor. Who cares? President. He's puppeteering Biden. But Putin said it's names that you don't even know. So who's running Washington, D.C.? Who's running America? It's names you don't even know. It's not Barry. Well, who would it be, and to what purpose? How are they doing it? Why are they running America remotely, and where from? Are they other Americans? Are they globalists? Are they, you know, shadow government? What's going on? And that would seem to be the case. We've got people running America that you don't even know the name of, just like Putin said, he's got good intelligence services. And by the way, what did Putin also say? Putin said that the mail-in ballot is what stole the vote in America. They talk about it in Russia. It's in the textbooks that the election was stolen from Trump to put Biden into office. Well, if the data that's coming out right now, the stuff that's going to be put into Supreme Court later this week and other cases to come, this is not the end. Bigger stuff. This is just convenient on the timing. They're the beneficiaries, but they didn't develop this. They're being given
material to use in this case, they didn't develop it. But if there's foreign interference, if the data was being run offshore, if what the sheriff in Michigan is saying is accurate, be it Serbian nationals and nationals from other countries colluding, working together with agents here in the United States to cook the vote, that means that there's a very great likelihood that the votes were enough to put Biden into office so that Trump wouldn't be there. And with Biden there, the puppeteers pulling Biden's strings have now been able to bring the world to the brink of war in Ukraine, brink of financial collapse with what's going to come out of Japan, actually Brazil and Japan, the food crisis that's being engineered right now out of South America into Europe, and a trade crisis there, a BRICS crisis, the invasion of America by millions of illegals, many with that hate America, that all of that is being done by people who hold power under a falsehood because they didn't get there legitimately. That's an act of war. We're at war. America's being attacked. If that's all true, what are you going to do about it? How do we respond to that? What's the mechanism of regaining control of the helm of our ship of state? And that's the crisis that's now developing, and I believe more and more Americans every day, every week, over the remainder of the spring here, are going to be having to do the mental gymnastics and going, well, if that's true, these people are murderers. They've caused the murder of Americans. You know, we have troops on the ground in Ukraine right now. NATO has troops on the ground in Ukraine right now. They had something the other day that one of the German general staff was talking about, the fact that they had, the Brits had troops on the ground in Ukraine right now. So we've got advisors in there. How do you feel about that as an American? How do you feel about the situation in Ukraine where we're, you know, really through proxies, but very thinly veiled in a war with Russia right now? That's pretty scary. It's pretty disturbing. It's pretty upsetting after we fought the Cold War and won, and now we're right back where we were, you know, 30 and 40 years ago. It's insane.
Yeah, we're at the point where, you know, we no longer can have any say about the wars because they're basically stealing elections. So we now have Attorney General Merrick Garland is pledging to fight voter ID laws, election integrity measure, and bring back the mail-in balloting, like we know is super compromised. So you have, they're coming at us from all different angles. Now, the Supreme Court has, you know, shot down Colorado's idea that they were going to stop Trump from being able to, you know, be on the ballot. But the Supreme Court has really not sided with anybody so far. So what do you think about that?
Well, let me just say this. One of the other heroes that we're going to have to make statues to is a beautiful guy out of Texas, Trentis Evans. Trentis is one of those guys that, who would have seen him coming? He's another David, okay? He actually wrote the amicus brief that was, had all three points that the Supreme Court cited in its finding, with all nine judges, throwing the case out from Colorado. Lots of people, including Trump's legal team, you know, Trump's legal team didn't even get one right. Of the things that the Supreme Court decided to agree with, some people had one. I think one party in an amicus brief had two. The only one that nailed all three was Trennis Evans. And they literally pulled sections out of what he said in his brief and used them almost verbatim in what they released. And so he's been doing all her stuff. He's got another case that's just been filed on not allowing the cases to be tried there in D.C., but having to move to a change of venue. There you go. He's done this amazing research showing that Washington, D.C. is so essentially one-sided in the way that they view these things and the information they have, that no person going to Washington, D.C. can get a fair trial on anything related to January 6th. And so you have to do a change of venue to another location. The courts haven't wanted to do that so far. And he's put this amazing case together. And I think we're going to get to the change of venue also. When you look at the material that he's got and the way they developed it, there's no question in my mind that you just cannot have a fair trial on this issue in Washington, D.C. And those J6 prisoners, they're being treated as terrorists in the same category as the 9/11 terrorists, where they don't even deserve bail or, they don't get hurt the same way they're like terrorists. So, these people that have been in jail now for years, waiting to get their cases in like that, it's preposterous. And in fact, later this week in D.C., I think some of us will be there to sing the national anthem every night at 9 o'clock with those prisoners. In fact, Trennis was with me. A number of other influencers that you would know the name of down in Texas this summer, and we had we were at a Trump rally. We were right there in the front row, and for legal reasons, the Trump want to sing the national anthem for specific legal reasons having to do with some of the court cases right at the time. But we had asked that President lead us in the national anthem at 9 o'clock, which was 8 o'clock Texas time. We got up to that minute, and the president was talking about the J6 situation, but. We got 30 seconds into it and still hadn't decided to step back and sing the national anthem. So Trennis looks at me, I look at him, and we both start singing. And the whole row of us start singing. And I'm not exaggerating. When you look at the video, it's literally 3 seconds, and the entire stadium is singing the national anthem together. And Trump, he paused for a few seconds, and then he stepped back away from the mic and allowed the crowd to go through it. People afterwards that had talked to Trump as he was going back to get on Trump Force One, Trump had said that was the most beautiful, spontaneous thing that he'd seen in any of his rallies to date. And that was just a very, very fun thing. So the singing with the J6 prisoners in Washington, D.C., an important symbolic event. But going back to, Trennis is the one that's doing the change of venue thing. He's the one that did the amicus brief related to getting the Colorado stuff thrown out. That's actually one other thing, Mike, I wanted to mention. What's amazing about the last few years, you've gotten a chance, all of us across the country have, to kind of see who the real patriots are, the real heroes. It's an amazing, privilege to get to rub shoulders with some of these people that are just amazing, like Tina, like Trennis, and so many others that have put their whole life into this. One of the ones that I deal with pretty regularly has put all of his fortune. When he's done, he'll have, most everything. And he was a very wealthy person in this fight just to get to the win. and hasn't held back, has put it as broadly as he can. And we'll make sure we get a statue of him too before it's all over. So there's a lot of folks that we're gonna have we owe a big debt to. That's the fun of this moment that we're in right now, finding out who the real ones are versus the talk.
Outstanding. Yeah, so we've had Victor Avilio, thanks for introducing us, and he's been on several shows. He is just crushing that region on the border. He said years ago that the border crisis would blow up, and he was like so accurate. So I'm glad to see that he's running for Congress. So what do you think the border is, this going to be the thing that basically is one of the, well, there's lots of things I think could get Trump in, but this could be the one that really gets him in over the top.
Well, let me just say this. You know, when Ken Paxton filed the lawsuit back after the 2020 election and the Supreme Court denied it, said that Texas and the other states didn't have standing, it was a state's matter. They really, that just grated on so many people. It just isn't true. The only person or the only court that could decide the matter between the states was really the Supreme Court. And I think that'll get revisited potentially. But in the border crisis, which is now a result of this election, you know, fraud that has been perpetrated on America and on the world. I say the world because we're involved in things all over the world that if Trump was president, most likely would not have happened. Much of the drama in the Mideast, this fighting going off in West Africa and East Africa, a mischief that Iran's involved in. It's questionable, you know, the Afghan withdrawal, the way it happened. The coming financial crisis out of Asia and Japan and Central America or South America. Most all of that arguably would not have happened had Trump gotten into office. So this election fraud has put the world in peril. It's not just America. But now you have, I think, 26 states so far that are signing up on talking about the border crisis, the invasion, and have joined up. If we have a majority of states now that are beginning to say that this illegality of flying illegals into the country, giving them UN money, that really is U.S. money being laundered through the UN. You know, these guys get credit cards for a couple $1,000s each, and then they go to the store, buy stuff, and they're going out to encampments in various places and digging in, waiting to be deployed or whatever it is they're going to do. You know, I was give you an idea how far and wide it is. I was in Hawaii 2 months ago, and one of the locals there, we had a pretty in-depth talk, and on several occasions, he works at the Walmart there. These people came in and needed help with their credit cards in the machine. They're buying camping equipment, sleeping bags, tents, everything. But they don't speak English. They didn't know how to use their card. So they're trying to put it in the machine. They don't understand. You got to push, you know, yes for the end of the sale and stuff like that. And so he's looking at the card, and that's a card that's issued by the UN to give these guys money. Now, the guys that were in Hawaii there, they didn't get there on a boat. They didn't come across the river. They didn't come across land bridge. We knew then, and that's what kind of spurred the conversations going further and further. We knew the aircraft they were flying him in on. And in tracking those aircraft and looking at other routes that they were involved in, we located all these cities. That's where the 320,000 people being flown into the U.S. from locations outside the U.S. as immigrants, they're not coming over the border. They're not coming through at the border. that are being flown into the U.S., and not just a couple. Do you know how many airline flights it would take to move 320,000 people on aircraft into America? That's an astonishing number. And every state, including Alaska, including Hawaii, and they're parking them there on land, waiting for what? What are they going to do? They're getting ready for some kind of mischief. And then they're getting paid to be there. How many people in your audience are struggling that if they got $2,000 a month, that would be the difference between, you know, a new pair of shoes for their kids, or even sending them to school with a lunch or not? Don't kid yourself. That's huge money. And then with the inflation doing what it's doing, it's getting more critical by the hour, and you're bringing people into the country and paying them more tax-free than many Americans even make. And to what purpose? Who's doing this? Why? It's because they want to take down America, and they want people in here who will follow their direction on the vote, things like that. Something's horribly, horribly wrong. So those states that are banding together now, the Supreme Court is going to have a hard time ignoring multiple states, over half the states, saying that this invasion, this federal operation and agreement isn't treasonous, traitorous, and illegal in the way that it's being forced on the states. And in our coalition candidates and other operations that we have, the push is for states' rights, state sovereignty, that we are a union of states, not a federal operation. Like the control of the country has been centralized. That's not what the Constitution called for. We're supposed to be working as states independently. In fact, the senators originally in the original constitutional makeup were considered like to Washington, D.C., because it was all about states' rights. That's what Reagan talked about. What you're going to see related to this immigrant war that's being set up for us is more and more states saying, we are not in agreement with what the Fed operation is doing, forcing these immigrants into our states. And we reject any of them coming into our states. You can't force them on us. It is a crime against the people in that state to force these immigrants into the various states. And that's the war that's coming.
Amazing. So I've had Sheila Holmes on. She speaks very highly of you. I guess you guys recently had a little roundtable. Boy, I wonder what was spoken at that roundtable. But it's
I was with a friend of mine. Arguably, we have a little back and forth. The youngest living spy in American. Alive in America today. He and I were together, and Sheila and his wife was there with us. Sheila came over and joined us, and we were there at the Super Tuesday event there at Mar-a-Lago. And had a great time, and then I spent some time with her for lunch the next day, and a couple of other people that were just, it was just fantastic, because I haven't seen Sheila, you know, in person for six or something months. And of course, I had sent her some stuff, and then she just went to outer space related to the eclipse. She's such a great researcher. Oh, and yeah. She's been out there quite a bit over the internet sharing that in a bunch of the shows. She's a gift because she has this understanding of history going back into the Pilgrim era before the Constitution. And the founders did what they did to formalize the states and the mechanisms of authority within the country.
And so she's done some just amazing work from a faith side in what she presents. So, and, you know, she's got 27 books she's written. I mean, gosh, it's just, it's amazing. So.
Absolutely. All right, Juan, is there anything else you want to close with? Thanks for bringing all this information in. This was really fantastic.
Well, I just think that I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I really wanted to share with your audience. I just want, don't allow yourself to fall into this normalcy bias. When you're in combat and you've made it through a few things, you tend to get into a flow, a routine. It's trained in, even in an extreme situation. And you have to understand that there's a changeup that can happen. If you get too much into a routine, you actually become vulnerable. If you allow your mind to get too trapped into a cadence or a machine, you'll miss something because you're doing it in repetition. Some of that's important and you want to do it, but there's times when the terrain changes, time of day, you get low on ammo or something and you want to start being way more precise. You're going from a countryscape to a city fight, door to door. You have to kind of change your set, your methodologies, your pacing. We're coming into a different phase of this fight, and all the people that were, you know, there's nothing to it, you can't prove anything. Don't let people suck you into that trap. You need to arm up with the current information. You need to familiarize yourself with what's going to be coming out over the next week or two and kind of understand it with precision. Out of courtesy to the people involved, I'm not going into the minutia for the broadcast here. That'll come out later in the week. Those people have owned it. They've done the heavy lifting. They get to do that and take the time to sift through it. And then be prepared, because more and more the people where people have fatigued out, they've heard all they want to hear, they've made their minds up somewhat, everybody's going to have to rethink what they know about the situation that we're in, because they probably don't know as much as they think they do within the current context of the fight. Need to be ready to rethink a lot of things that were said, and understand that actually you are getting brand new, completely new information, stuff that wasn't disclosed before, or stuff there where there was innuendo, but there wasn't the backup stuff that is now coming out. And it is a crisis for the country, because if what we're saying is true, and it is, then you have people in power who are there through fraud, people in power who are not their own people, their own man. They are somebody's puppet. And when you realize that they're somebody's puppet and they have a purpose, it's an un-American purpose, and lives are on the line. Our government is doing things that are not things that we as citizens want to have to carry the weight for. Killing, murder, destruction of countries. And we have a personal responsibility as American citizens to get control of our ship of state. And we got to wrestle through it, do it within the legal boundaries, press forward, and also stop this illegal invasion that suits the purposes of these foreign interests, these globalista, and save the country for future generations. And, you know, at the end of the day, really, you know, I sing the song with Jennifer, 2020, it's not over yet. You know, that's really what this is all about. It is still about 2020. We're fighting an election stuff all across the country for 2024. One thing I do, I guess I should add also in there, people say, well, you know, I've said for several years that we're not going to have a 2024 election on time. And people say, well, then, you know, why are we doing this whole exercise with the race? And why don't we just stop? Why would somebody want to be a candidate? Because at the point that the pause happens, those people that are in strong positions and have been fighting, they're not, it's not like we're never having another election in America or something. It's a pause. When we clear out some of the chafe and some of the issues become apparent, we're going to have to, you know, continue on and have those elections. And those people that were in the best position when we paused will still be in the best position to come back and finish the race and take office. We're going to need every one of those people to be ready to go fill that role of representative government to represent us in the offices to get the country back on the right track. So it's not a futile exercise to be running for office and to explaining these things and to even within the legal stuff we have going right, have the public discussion. What's the meaning of, you know, this if we have fraudulent people holding office and they're doing all these things? What are the consequences and how are we going to stop it? And having the public forum for discussions in the election period is all useful. I do believe that we have a pause that's coming. It won't be because the good guys do it. The bad guys are going to do it because they realize they just can't hold power. And by the way, you know, you triggered me, and I think of these other things. President Trump said something interesting the other day. He talked about that 82% of the American people now believe that Biden got there through fraud, got into office through fraud. And, you know, they disagree on certain other areas, but within that category, they're at 82% plus. Now, that's a really important number. You know, with your audience, that I've said numerous times that we have to have 80+%, a very specific number, in agreement moving forward so that we don't go into civil war. Doesn't mean there's no civil unrest, but you, as you get below that number, the likelihood that some spark, some bizarre event, whatever, could cause the country to degrade enough that somehow we find ourselves in a civil war, states refusing to work with other states, and, you know, the business of America's business. If the states can't work together, the country starts coming off the rails. So you have to have 80+%. Now, I said with your audience and other audiences last fall that we were solidly into the 80+%. We aren't going to civil war.
Good. All good.
Because of that, okay. But what Trump said, he said we had 82+% in the most current polling. Why is that number important? Because we have enough of a buffer that, you know, with the Obama movie, you know, showing America going into civil war and how it would happen and all this other BS bullshit that they had going, they're trying to do a prophecy from the devil's angle, a reversal of the Kim Clement prophecy, prophesying a destructive future for America. They're trying to implant a future memory in the people to bring it to pass. And you know, make it happen. What Trump was saying with the 82%+ is that we now have enough of a margin that we're solid enough in this, we're in agreement as a people enough that the things that the other side could do that would make us turn and fight with our brother and go to war internally in America, that's, you know, virtually an impossibility at this point in time with where the American people are at, their psyche, the social situation. It's a different fight. We will have civil unrest. There is going to be disruption. And I've said it's going to be a near-death experience for America because they're going to have to get more extreme to try and retain control of America. The next phase, just like the final phase when we took down the Soviet Union, was in the financial sector. The final phase in America here is still going to be the same thing. It's kind of a similar playbook. That's the one where you really try to take it the rest of the way, and people should be prepared for that. you know, people ask me all the time, you know, is my money going to be okay? Am I, my retirement account, you know, are my dollars going to be okay? And I say, well, what kind of dollars you got? Well, what are you talking about? Well, do you have constitutional dollars? Well, yeah. What are you talking about? Well, what's in your 401k? Is it in the stock market? Where's it at? You know, well, it's in my bank account. It's my stock market. So, yeah, so you've got Federal Reserve dollars, right? That might be a problem. If you have constitutional dollars, that's gold and silver coin. You might want to rethink that. This crisis that's coming, the fight that we're going to have, a component of it, it's not everything, will be in the money supply, the banking, etc. They'll do anything to try to stop a Trump return, to try to stop conservatives getting back into power, including stopping an election, starting a nuclear war if they were if that were possible. Whatever they could do to burn down the cities across the country, microwave laser attacks, earthquakes, you name it, they're all in play. People need to understand that it is a real battle. If you were in occupied Paris and the mayor told you that our good friends, the Nazis, want you to do this and this and this, and everybody agree and turn right and do this, would you trust, would you be naive enough to think that whatever the mayor was saying was being said because he truly believes it, unless he's in collusion with the occupiers? Or would you take it with a grain of salt, understanding that, you know, his life, his family, everything else is on the line, and maybe he's saying it, but he doesn't really have a whole lot of choice. He's doing the best he can from a difficult position. And conversely, if you disagree, would you go out in the middle of the street and start screaming, I hate you bloody Nazis, blah, blah, blah? How many seconds would you last? So you're in an occupied situation here in the country. Not everything that's said is exactly what is meant. There might be some coded messages in there, and you kind of have to understand the context situation. You need to make individual, close-to-home decisions. You don't have to go running around the country to protest and looking for trouble. The correct thing coming into this environment that we're coming into right now is staying closer to home, knowing who all your neighbors are, and be ready to kind of hunker down a little bit in place while this whole thing passes through. And by the way, it's not a bad strategy, because these people that are invaders that are here, they're the ones who are going to be moving around. They're the ones that don't have a place that they belong in your neighborhood. They're going to stand out because they are out moving around. And eventually you'll have to self-centralize down to these 14 cities. So everybody take a deep breath. You know, there is contingencies in place. This is going to get a bit gripping. But at the end of the day, I think we're in pretty good shape. You just want to you know, think in terms that you're in an occupied location. And fight's on, and we're about to see some cool stuff come over the horizon. Those glowing things headed your direction over your head are Volkswagens at Mach 3, and they're about to be big womp in the enemy's camps.
No doubt, no doubt. Right, Wyatt.
And 2020, it's right. Not over yet. By the way, did you see this? I don't know if I showed you this. This is the new coin. That's the dress that Melania wore. I've talked about the coding in the dresses that for Melania, and so that's the dress covered in cubes, mimicking what I had in every page of my book, and that's that. Then Trump on the other side there, so it's kind of fun. If you go over that JenniferMack.com or Gumroad, All Patriots at Gumroad, you'll see that. So anyway, fun stuff. And by the way, you know, Isaac, I didn't send you one. Jen has the new jacket out, 2020. It's not over yet. It's a cool jacket. Go look at it. It's got all the verses to the song on the sleeve. So we'll have to send you fun stuff there too. So anyway, bro.
All right. Thanks, Juan. And the JenniferMack.com, guys. So always pleasure, honor have you on, sir. And we appreciate your insights. Thanks a lot.
Yep. I'll look forward to doing it again. Thanks for letting me do this on short notice. I want to make sure we got this out for people so that they have a context moving forward. There's a lot of great information. Some beautiful people will be putting stuff out over the next day. And fight's on.
Yeah, you've been nailing it all, so appreciate it. Way ahead of everything, so thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for listening to Unleashing Intuition Secrets, the podcast. Until next time, stay in the love vibration as you continue your journey to become the master of your reality.